Exercise is the key not only to physical health, but to peace of mind. Nelson Mandela.
Man's time here is finite, but the influence of a man is infinite. The question is, what shall we do with the daylight that remains?
Thank you for tuning in today. I appreciate you guys showing up. Today we're going to be talking about effects of exercise on biology. I'm going to talk about things like how exercise increases blood flow and oxygen availability to the brain, increases growth factor that promote new brain cells and new neural pathways in the brain, increases levels of neurotransmitters such as serotonin, which increase memory retention, information processing, and cognition. So the brain benefits dramatically from exercise, which I think we've mentioned some of those things in past episodes, whether it's from Why We Sleep or The Brain, the book The Brain, The Story of You, or Younger Next Year, a variety of health books that we've covered in the past. You can check out any of those former episodes and gain a bit deeper understanding of some of those pathways and effects on your body. But we're going to dive into a variety of different things and just touch on a handful of very interesting aspects of exercise and its effect on the body today. And this kind of is stemming from a couple of things. One is my personal journey over the last couple of years. Now, as a young person, I was very athletic and active in sports, played as many sports as I was allowed to in high school, and then played college basketball. And then, of course, I stayed active over time. But during COVID, I sort of took the quarantine as a license to be lazy. And it wasn't that I was just completely lazy in my life, but lazy about exercise. I have four kids, so lazy is not really a very good option. At the time, we were just having our fourth. And so working from home, working long hours, dealing with homeschool and all that stuff, it just added up. And as I said, I took that as a, permission slip that I could just quit exercising regularly. And it came with a lot of negative effects. I mean, I just didn't feel as generally happy or as healthy. When I did do some physical things, I just was not as capable of performing at a high level that was entertaining and fun for me. It's frustrating when you're an athletic person and enjoy competition in sports, and then you go out to play and it's like difficult and saps your energy, and then you get winded too quickly to actually put in full effort. And that's not fun, but also the mood, my relationships, everything sort of had a downtick in satisfaction and overall health. So when I started exercising again, it had to be an intentional thing. And I was actually telling my wife this just today, saying how all of my life, I've always gotten some sort of a high off of exercise, right? I'll go exercise and I feel really refreshed, feel like I can just breathe really well and clear and think clearly. And I'm excited to live life, to do a lot of things. Well, I had gotten so out of shape for myself that when I started exercising again, I didn't feel that for quite a while, but I remembered it. And I told myself, I can't wait to get back to that point. Like I'm going to do this consistently till I get to that point where it feels good to exercise. And it didn't take too long, but I certainly feel that these days. I've exercised several days in a row pretty hard. And when I exercise, it feels like I'm on fire. It feels good. So there's my personal journey. But the other thing is, I started listening to an episode from Rhonda Patrick's podcast, Found My Fitness. If you don't know Rhonda Patrick, she's an excellent listen, but she's very sciencey. She actually works in a science lab and does a lot of research on like omega-3s and the effects of saunas on health. Her page is awesome on Instagram as well. So I started listening to an episode kind of casually, actually, and it's one of those episodes that you can't do that because it's really talking about the biology of the brain. And so I'll give you a bit of what I took away from that just in its initial maybe 20 minutes or so. She has this professor on, or a scientist that's studying the brain, the blood-brain barrier. And he mentioned at various points these teeny little blood vessels that essentially give oxygen to the brain neurons. And if you do not get enough blood to those, or oxygen, they'll collapse and die, and they disappear. And then, of course, those neurons that they were feeding will also deteriorate and die, which is your brain, right? He talks about parasites that are attached to this blood-brain barrier and to one another, and they really keep it tight, and they play a big role in what actually gets across that barrier, such as oxygen, right? But that no blood does. And MRIs are getting so good now that they can actually scan this and see if there's any leaks in your blood-brain barrier. And I don't know to what degree, but they can visually see that. And apparently, if you have, you know, a certain amount of leaks for your age, you're at higher risk for like severe Alzheimer's later in life. So you can sort of now see what path you're on, which I thought was interesting. And so, of course, that leads to the discussion of like, well, how do you prevent these from falling apart? How do you prevent the leaky brain? And I have not yet finished the episode, in full transparency, so I still need to go look into that. But it started me down a path of reading and educating myself on some of the brain health effects of exercise, right? One of the effects of exercise and things that you can do to improve that blood-brain barrier's health is very intense exercise. So most of the time when we talk about just general overall health, we're usually talking about just moderate cardio exercise on a regular basis. Don't sit sedentary too long. Make sure you get up and down, go up and down stairs, go out and weed the garden, shovel snow, you know, maybe a jog or a walk. That's typically what we're talking about, but they're actually saying really intense physical exercise. I've heard Huberman talk about this as well. Go jump on the bike and just go as hard as you can, like a tiger's chasing you, for 10 minutes. And that has a lot of benefits for your body. So anyway, I found that extremely intriguing. So I started Googling and searching for effects of exercise on your biology. And let me just give you a brief on a handful of things that exercise does for your biology. So I will start with Holistic Heart Centers of America. And they have this very brief bullet-pointed article that shows a variety of things. So biological effects of exercise. Many people exercise to clear their head, tone their body, or as a form of socialization. These are great reasons to get up and get active, but there are many other reasons why you should exercise daily. Studies have shown the body reaps many benefits of exercise, including biological benefits. Below is a list of areas in your body that are benefited by exercise. Number one, your heart. The more you exercise, the more efficient your heart can supply oxygenated blood to your muscles. Regular physical activity aids in lowering cholesterol, as some studies have shown it to enhance transportation through your body's natural filtration system, as well as helps to reduce overall particle size. I'd never heard that before. Reduces the actual particle sizes of these cholesterol. It helps your muscles. Exercising daily results in higher blood flow to your muscles and an increase in your muscle size. Helps your lungs. Your breathing rate increases as a result of heavier exercise because the muscles in your body are demanding more oxygen. Exercising helps your lungs become more efficient in removing carbon dioxide waste and delivering oxygen to your body. Helps your bones and joints. Exercising your body regularly helps you maintain a healthy bone mass. Exercise helps prevent osteoporosis, a condition where bones become brittle from loss of tissue. I think resistance training specifically helps osteoporosis. Your brain. Exercise not only helps your body, but it helps your brain by improving brain function and memory. Okay, so there's a quick bullet point list of things. We'll go into more detail on some of it. Next, let's go to sciencedirect.com. This is a scientific article on beneficial health effects of exercise and the role of IL-6 as a myokine. So there's well-known cytokines They've actually started calling some of them myokines, and we'll talk about that here. It says here in the introduction, it's not clear how contracting skeletal muscle mediate the numerous and diverse metabolic and physiological effects that are beneficial for health. Researchers have searched for a muscle contraction-induced factor, an exercise factor, that mediates some of the exercise effects in other tissues, such as the liver and adipose tissue. In our search for such a factor, we encountered the cytokine interleukin IL-6, which is produced by contracting muscle and released into the blood. We propose that muscle-derived IL-6 meets the criteria of an exercise factor and that such classes of cytokine should be named myokines. The discovery of contracting muscle as a cytokine-producing organ creates a new paradigm. Skeletal muscle as an endocrine organ. You ever heard of that? That your skeletal muscle could be an endocrine organ? By contracting, it stimulates the production and release of myokines that can influence metabolism in tissue and organs. Newly identified myokines and the receptors could serve as targets in the treatment of metabolic disorders and other diseases. Chronic diseases are the major cause of death worldwide, led by cardiovascular disease, 17 million deaths per year, and followed by cancer, 7 million. Chronic lung disease, 4 million. Diabetes mellitus, almost 1 million deaths per year. The rapid increase in the number of non-communicable chronic diseases represents one of the major health challenges to global development in this century. This growing challenge threatens economics and social development. In addition, the lives and health of millions of people, based on the current trends, these diseases are expected to account for 70% of deaths and 60% of disease burden by 2020. It is well known that regular exercise, independent of body mass index, offers protection against all-cause mortality, primarily by protecting against atherosclerosis, type 2 diabetes, colon cancer, and breast cancer. In addition, randomized intervention studies show that physical training is effective in the treatment of patients with ischemic heart disease, heart failure, type 2 diabetes, and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Moreover, recent observational studies indicate that exercise after the onset of breast cancer or colorectal cancer could reduce the risk of death from this disease. It is, however, unclear how contracting skeletal muscles mediate the numerous and diverse metabolic and physiological effects that are beneficial for health. For most of the 20th century, researchers attempted to identify a muscle contraction-induced factor that could mediate some of the exercise-induced changes in other organs such as the liver and adipose tissue. In response to exercise, the markedly increased glucose uptake by the contracting skeletal muscle corresponds to an increased glucose production by the liver, whereby glucose homeostasis is maintained. How does the contracting muscle modulate metabolism in the liver? In response to exercise, adipose tissue increases the release of free fatty acid into the circulation. How do contracting muscles and adipose tissue communicate? Furthermore, repeated bouts of exercise affect blood pressure, lipid profile, and insulin sensitivity. Which mechanisms link contracting skeletal muscle to these diverse effects? So anyway, I won't bore you with an extended read of this scholarly article, but it does have a lot of information and detail about these cytokines or myokines, as they're calling them, and how exercise affects these things. We know it affects it for sure, but what exactly those mechanisms are is maybe still unclear. So affecting your blood sugar, your adipose tissue, the size of the molecules of cholesterol, a lot of stuff going on here. All right, here's another scholarly article for you. This is from PubMed Central, Biological Mechanisms Underlying the Role of Physical Fitness in Health and Resilience. I'll give you the abstract. Physical fitness achieved through regular exercise and or spontaneous physical activity confers resilience by inducing positive psychological and physiological benefits, blunting stress reactivity, protecting against potentially adverse behavioral and metabolic consequences of stressful events, and preventing many chronic diseases. In this review, we discuss the biological mechanism underlying the beneficial effects of physical fitness on mental and physical health. Physical fitness appears to buffer against stress-related disease owing to its blunting, optimizing effects on hormonal stress-responsive systems, such as the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis and the sympathetic nervous system. This blunting appears to contribute to reduced emotional, psychological, and metabolic reactivity, as well as an increased positive mood and well-being. Another mechanism whereby regular exercise and/or physical fitness may confer resilience is through minimizing excessive inflammation. Chronic psychological stress, physical inactivity, and abdominal adipose tissue have been associated with persistent systemic low-grade inflammation and exert adverse effects on mental and physical health. The anti-inflammatory effects of regular exercise activity can promote behavioral and metabolic resilience and protect against various chronic diseases associated with systemic inflammation. Moreover, exercise may benefit the brain by enhancing growth factor expression and neuroplasticity, thereby contributing to improved mood and cognition. In summary, the mechanisms whereby physical fitness promote increased resilience and well-being and positive psychological and physical health are diverse and complex. So there it is again, talking about the importance of blood flow to the various parts of the body, specifically the brain, and how increased blood flow promotes all kinds of health factors. Some of the communication methods we don't yet understand, but the way I think of it is like, you know, how do we communicate with one another? Well, there's the primary method, which would just be verbal communication, but we can do that by phone. We could do that in person. And then we could also send an email. We could send a text. We could contact over social media. It seems to be a similar situation in the body where there's, of course, the major stuff like your nervous system, neurons connecting your brain to your, you know, certain cells or muscles of the body. We've got hormones, some of which are very well known, but there are other mechanisms that we still don't have a great grasp of, and yet they seem to be communicating and connecting a variety of activities to communicate across the body. Within the body of this article, he's talking about the history of exercise, and he says, since those first studies, the literature has become replete with evidence that physical inactivity serves as a major role in the rising prevalence of obesity, cardiovascular disease, hypertension, type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, hyperlipidemia, breast and colon cancers, as well as depression and anxiety. Moreover, physical inactivity is the fourth leading contributor to death worldwide. Is that jaw-dropping to you? That's crazy. All of those horrifying and unwanted things in your life are highly correlated with inactivity and obesity. So get up and move. If you've been on my Instagram account at all, you see that I say, start moving. I mean that literally and figuratively. Find a goal and get after it. And now, before we leave the idea of blood flow to the brain, I'm reminded of Dr. Amen and his work. We did an episode on one of his books as well. Is it The Brain is Always Listening, I think? He's got a few books. And essentially, Dr. Amen has done thousands of brain scans on his clients. Now, he's a psychologist, but he does a brain scan before he treats them and trying to identify which area of the brain may have sort of inadequate activity. And one of the remedies for pretty much all his clients is to get on a brain healthy diet. And he suggests that for everyone, of course, a brain healthy diet. But simple carbs and things that have a high glycemic index and send a lot of blood sugar to your blood decrease blood flow to the brain. So alcohol restricts blood flow to the brain, specifically the prefrontal cortex. So it obviously makes you dumber. It makes you dumber both in social situations, but also we can test for it. We can see that the blood flow is decreased and your intelligence is down. There's just really no good scenario for you to consume alcohol when it comes to your health, right? So things like that, even rice has a mild effect on your brain. So that was kind of interesting. Okay, so back to exercise. I started looking at all kinds of things. I went like, okay, what's the effects of exercise on sleep? And first of all, let me just go to Dr. Matthew Walker on Instagram, because his last post I saw is this. When is the best and worst time to exercise when it comes to sleep? In this latest episode, we discuss both the how and the when, not just the if and what of exercise timing and sleep. Hold up. I was wrong about exercise timing and sleep. Unsurprisingly, since I've been wrong about many things, my old advice was to avoid exercise in the evening. It's a myth, mostly. New episode explains all. Great news for night owls. Evening exercise can boost the amount of sleep you get by 15 minutes. Exercise, even as close to 2 hours before bed, has been shown to take half the time it normally takes to fall asleep and boost deep NREM sleep by up to 20%. Can you exercise as close to 90 minutes before bed without harming your sleep? The answer, surprisingly, is yes, and the explanation is covered in the new episode. In a study with healthy men, a 30-minute cardio or weight training session just 90 minutes before bed didn't impact body temperature or sleep quality. Isn't that interesting? So even exercising within 90 minutes of bedtime, it still had positive effects on sleep. So it was thought that exercising in the later half of the day, you know, of course, when you exercise, you increase certain amount of like adrenaline and dopamine. But also if you do it consistently, your body predicts the exercise and gets a little shot of energy. And so having that just prior to going to bed might cause poor sleep. But what Dr. Walker is saying is that that is actually inaccurate, and that actually exercise within a couple hours of bed still helps you to fall asleep quicker and get more NREM sleep. And Dr. Walker is the author of Why We Sleep, one of my favorite books. So interesting. That was from his Twitter account. All right. Next up is the sleepfoundation.org. How does exercise affect sleep? The relationship between exercise and sleep has been extensively investigated over the years. Previous studies have noted that proper exercise can alleviate sleep-related problems and help you get an adequate amount of rest. Recent research also suggests insufficient or poor quality sleep can lead to lower levels of physical activity the following day. For these reasons, experts today believe sleep and exercise have a bidirectional relationship. In other words, optimizing your exercise routine can potentially help you sleep better, and getting an adequate amount of sleep may promote healthier physical activity levels during the day. How does exercise impact sleep? There are many benefits to exercising regularly. These include a lower risk of diseases like cancers and diabetes, improved physical function, and a higher quality of life. Exercising can also benefit certain groups. For example, pregnant women who engage in routine physical activity are less likely to gain an excessive amount of weight or experience postpartum depression, and elderly people who exercise are at lower risk of being injured during a fall. Exercising also improves sleep for many people. Specifically, moderate to vigorous exercise can increase sleep quality for adults by reducing sleep onset, or the time it takes to fall asleep, and decrease the amount of time they lie awake in bed during the night. Additionally, physical activity can help alleviate daytime sleepiness and, for some people, reduce the need for sleep medications. Exercise can also improve sleep in indirect ways. For instance, moderate to vigorous physical activity can decrease the risk of excessive weight gain, which in turn makes that person less likely to experience symptoms of obstructive sleep apnea. Roughly 60% of moderate to severe OSA cases have been attributed to obesity. So the two most important things you can do for your health, as far as I know, is sleep well and exercise, and they both affect the other. So there's the cycle there. If you exercise well, you'll sleep better. If you sleep really well, you'll exercise better. You'll have more energy to do so, more alertness, more resources. You'll recover better in sleep, etc. So it just goes round and round. So prioritize these two things for your overall health. Next is from the American Academy of Ophthalmology. So what are the effects of exercise on vision. Exercise promotes healthy blood vessels in the eye. The study suggests that exercise boosts the eye's resilience. Exercise may protect against the overgrowth of blood vessels, which occurs in eye conditions such as neurovascular glaucoma, AMD, and diabetic retinopathy. You ever thought of that? Exercise affecting your vision? So that made me think, well, does it affect your hearing? From the Hearing Foundation, cardiovascular exercise is vital to hearing health as one ages. A person over 50 years old without a genetic predisposition to hearing loss and who engages in cardio for 20 to 30 minutes five times weekly is more likely to maintain a healthy auditory system than someone with low cardiovascular activity. Okay, so what about something that's a little less directly related? You know, like obviously your brain dies without good blood flow, so exercise helps that. Same with your eyes and your ears and all these, your muscles, increase muscle strength, bone strength. What about how does exercise affect your relationships? Reduced stress and boost mood. This is from bioneurix.com. Exercise improves your relationships by lowering your stress and improving your mood. When we exercise, we release endorphins, or the body's natural feel-good hormones. The endorphins lower the effects of stress and anxiety. The hormones produced from exercise make people feel happier, and this ultimately improves social engagement. One study found that exercise on one day leads to more positive social interactions into the next day. Exercise puts a smile on people's faces, and smiling people are seen as more attractive. They talk about physiological arousal, some of the physiological changes from exercise, like dilated pupils and sweaty palms and a variety of other vascular system related things are the exact same thing mimicked in arousal. And so there's some sort of health benefits there, but also can cause arousal when you see your partner. Self-confidence. It is impossible to cultivate substantial healthy relationships with others if we do not have one with ourselves. Exercise helps us to improve our self-image and confidence. The more we exercise, the more we tend to believe in ourselves. People who exercise have higher levels of self and body image than those who do not. It's a form of self-care. You meet positive people when you're out exercising. You can exercise with your partner. People who exercise together have positive emotion together. And lastly, from pathways.health, it reduces pain. Although the exact mechanisms behind it are not yet understood, regular exercise produces an analgesic effect, which means that exercise is directly reducing pain. This study explains for those suffering from chronic pain, exercise can also have a pain-relieving effect. There's a substantial and growing body of evidence that long-term exercise training can provide pain relief across many different chronic pain conditions. So part of the pain reducer is the analgesic effect, but some of the other things to think about with exercise, if you have a chronic pain condition, it strengthens your muscles. It reduces stiffness. It helps maintain general health. Good for your mental health, reduces cognitive issues, reduces stress levels, increases energy and decreases fatigue, helps with sleep, retrains the brain, builds confidence, decreases inflammation, and increases immune function. So, exercise. I've preached this for a while, and in my ebook, Ingrained, I talk about if you don't know where to start, I say start with exercise. It's the fastest way to start making progress in your life. There are even studies that show that people's income is higher for those who exercise than for those who don't. So there's a lot of reason to exercise and make exercise your starting point if you're looking to really turn your life in a new direction and make some progress. If you're stuck in the mud, that's the place to start. You can make the quickest, most significant amount of progress there because of the effects on your self-image, your self-esteem. It's so easy to set a goal and a routine and track it. And whether you're actually doing what you said you were going to do or not, the emotional and physical effects are noticeable. So exercise is a wonderful place to start if you're just trying to kind of get your wheels turning again. So anyway, I hope this was helpful for you. And obviously you could go into extreme detail on some of these things and try and dig into the biology, which I thoroughly enjoy. But the idea is to get enough information to help us all understand that exercise is one of the most important things in our lives for our relationships, for our longevity, for our ability to show up and do well in a variety of ways, whether that's for our families and our kids and our grandkids or at work or in our communities. And so make sure you prioritize exercise in your life, even if it's just a short amount of time. Get some vigorous exercise in for 10, 15, 20 minutes, and it will dramatically improve your life. So that's it for me. Thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you on the next one. Hey, thanks for listening to the entire episode. As a token of gratitude, I want to give you a discount on my book, Ingrained. Head over to bronsonwilks.com/store and download Ingrained for less than a dollar with the coupon code GOALS, G-O-A-L-S.